Sunset and Sunrise, an I Sometimes Wonder interlude by Tipper, a Stargate Atlantis fanfiction, part of the I Sometimes Wonder series, part 2. Relationships, Jennifer, Rodney, Rodney, John. Tags include angst, drama, breakup, complicated relationships, post-canon, domestic, possibly unrequited love? Interlude. Summary. A few weeks after Rodney admits to John that he has feelings for him, he's coming to terms with what that means, and who else he might hurt with that admission. Rodney shifted to relieve sore back muscles, tired from overcompensating for his still healing stomach, and tried to find a more comfortable sitting position. He winced at the tightness in his belly, then relaxed as he leaned back on his arms, returning to gazing out at the ocean off the northwest pier. The sun was setting, the sky melting from pale blue and gold to pinks, purples, and indigos. He knew he didn't always appreciate the colors as, well, colors, having been more fascinated by the math and science that explained their creation growing up. But today he just wanted to think, pretty. He remembered the last time he thought that, when he and John had sat out here, when his memory was failing and his ability to think was, well, he thought pretty then too. That time felt like a dream, almost 2 years ago now, a strange blip in his story relegated to the pile of traumatic experiences that he had started to almost, not quite, but almost, get used to having. Before Atlantis, hell, before the SGC, his most traumatic experience was something he'd barely been aware of. Getting so sick from the flu that he'd woken up in a hospital, his sister curled up by his side, and his dad arguing with his mother in the hallway outside. That brief moment of disorientation, of knowing he'd lost time and couldn't have stopped it, that had terrified him. It had stuck with him as his most horrible experience all the way up until he'd walked into that energy monster a few days after they'd been in Atlantis. You'd think it had been when his mother had died. Except he didn't. Couldn't quite remember that. He hadn't been living with her at the time. He'd been in boarding school and he'd been angry with her about something. He was always angry with her about something. And she had been perennially angry or disappointed with him. When she'd gotten sick, she had told him not to bother coming home, that she'd be fine. Then she was gone. It had happened over a weekend. His father hadn't told him for 3 days. If his sister hadn't somehow gotten a hold of the phone, his barely 7-year-old sister, and called him in tears, forcing his dad to grab the phone from her and explain, Rodney might not have known until after the funeral. Still, he'd loved her. He'd never told her that. The therapist here always told him that she knew. He wasn't so sure. His father hadn't ever told him that he loved Rodney either. So Rodney had acted in kind. Consequently, the first person he had ever said the L word to was his sister. Recently, when he thought he was dying. Then he told his team, during one of those traumatic experiences he'd like to forget when, again, he thought he was dying. Then Jennifer, also during a traumatic experience, when a parasite in his brain convinced him to actually say things he was thinking out loud. Oh, and he thought he was dying. And then, recently, yeah, he wasn't really certain what to do about that. Because he hadn't just told John in that cell that he loved him the way he might have said it to, say, his sister, or even Jennifer, a declaration that had been a bit muddled by the aforementioned parasite. No, he meant it in a much deeper way, much like how he felt about Jennifer now, except, and this was the problem, somehow more? And there was no parasite to blame that one on. No ascension machine freeing up his inhibitions. Nothing. Although, again, dying. It was confusing, because John had been right about one thing. He liked women. He'd thought about men from time to time, sometimes in school, sometimes in Russia, and lately. One in particular. But mostly it had always been women. But he'd been thinking about John a lot more lately. Not that he would ever say anything under any other possible circumstance. John was most assuredly not interested. The fact that he'd not come by to even say hello in 2 weeks made that glaringly obvious. Yet, it didn't really matter. It was a thing that was. He'd come to accept it. But because of it, he felt like an asshole. Not to John. John was fine. John was always fine. No, he was an asshole because... Hey. Jennifer's soft, sweet voice wasn't an intrusion exactly, but it wasn't entirely welcome either. Not like it used to be. In this moment, it felt almost like she could read his cheating mind, and the guilt washed over him. He threw on a smile and looked up at her. Hey. She settled down next to him, letting her legs bounce off the pier a bit. You okay? She asked, not looking over at him. Nothing's hurting that bad today, he answered. I feel closer to normal. She smiled thinly. I know that. You told me that earlier. Well, it's still true, he said peevishly. I meant, she bit her lip slightly. Is everything okay up here? She tapped her head.
He sighed. Oh.
Because, she said tentatively, I feel like you, and I know this is probably silly, but I feel like you've maybe been avoiding me a little bit, not inviting me into your room and not coming by as often, and... She looked down at the water below her feet, and that sort of thing. He had no answer for that, so he didn't. He honestly didn't know what to say. Well, he did, but he was too ashamed. As the long pause continued, she closed her eyes, sighed, and then opened them again. I'd like to know what's going on, she said softly. Rodney's mouth had gotten very dry, and he swallowed convulsively. Nothing is going on. Rodney, I came to watch the sunset. Sure, she looked out at the view. He frowned. You don't believe me. She glanced at him. Would you? Okay, she had a point. Damn it, he sighed. No. She looked at her feet again, knocking her heels gently against the side of the pier. After another long moment, she said, I noticed John didn't visit you very often in the infirmary, and you haven't mentioned him much. No. Did you two have a falling out?
Not exactly.
She nodded again, still not looking at him. Does it? She hesitated, then seemed to draw herself up. Does it have something to do with what you might have said to him on MX8221? Maybe something personal? He frowned slightly. Because I know he's... She took in another deep breath, as if fortifying herself. I know he's important to you. You two have this thing, and it's special. You talk to each other sometimes, especially when you're in the field, and you don't use words. It's... She pressed her lips together and looked out at the sunset. It actually makes me a little jealous sometimes, the way you are with him, the way you look at him sometimes. Rodney looked down at the water and wondered briefly whether, if he threw himself off the pier right now, could he get away from this conversation without killing himself? You love him, don't you? She said then, staring now at the same water, maybe even having the same thought. And he knew it was his turn to be brave now. Yes. She gave a nod. Then she asked the real question he'd been dreading. More than me? She asked softly.
Oh, God, this was torture.
I don't know, he admitted, just as softly, because it was true. He wasn't totally sure. Part of him was certain, but the analytical side of him, the side that still wanted a life like his sister's, with a house and kids in the yard and no one questioning whether it was normal or legal, and the side that told him that John was never, ever going to love him back? Wasn't sure. And Jennifer gave another nod. You're... Ronnie drew in a deep breath. Jennifer, you're the first person I've ever loved that I could see a future with. One where I could be content and things could be good without people trying to kill us or drive us from our home. We're similar, you and me. We're not the heroes or the badasses or the shoot-first types. We're thinkers, and we complement each other, and you understand me in a way that I'm not so sure anyone ever has. And I love you for that. But, she offered up softly, but I'm not good for you. She closed her eyes. No, he said, lifting his hands. Really, hear me out. When we were stuck on Earth, with Atlantis floating outside San Francisco, and all of us wondering what was going to happen next, you went home to see your dad for a bit, and you didn't invite me to go with you. You just went, and you didn't say that you wanted to go with me, she said, opening her eyes again to look at the now almost fully set sun. I wasn't sure you'd want me to meet him. When I told you I wanted to go home, you just said, great, have fun. I'll see you when you get back. I wasn't sure. I took that to mean you didn't want to meet him. You practically ran from the room after. Ronnie pursed his lips. She wasn't wrong. The idea of meeting her dad had sounded terrifying. He imagined Mr. Keller taking one look at him and looking at Jennifer and saying, him? That's the very best you could do? And she'd have to admit the dating pool at her job had very few options, and that'd be true. So he'd avoided the topic until she left and didn't bring it up again until after she returned, except to ask how it had gone immediately after. All I'm saying, he said, is that I would have understood if you didn't want to meet him. I mean, I'm a genius, sure, and that's great for the gene pool, but beyond that, I know I'm not exactly what every dad would want their daughter to bring home. You're gorgeous and smart and kind and, face it, as a person, so much better than I am. I just figured I'd spare you the embarrassment of, stop it, she snapped angrily. She pressed her hands to her eyes. Just stop. I don't know what you... I'm not going to help you break up with me, McKay, she said, the hurt in her voice overcoming any anger she might have had. You're not using me or my dad as an excuse. I'm not... Yes, you are. You're trying to get me to say that I agree that you're not good enough for me, that I shouldn't love you. Well, fuck you. He pressed his lips together. She never swore, unless she was really angry. She turned away, wrapping her arms around herself tightly. Jennifer? No, I know you think I'm settling for you. You think you're not what I want. But damn it, you're... She wiped the tears from her face. You're such an idiot. You have no idea. She scowled in annoyance as more tears fell, and she had to rub her sleeve roughly across her cheeks. You have no idea how great you are. Your worst quality isn't that you're pompous or a bad person or an asshole or whatever you think. Your worst quality is that deep down, you don't think you're worth anything. Hate that you think that way, and I can't convince you otherwise. Your ego, wrapped around that big head of yours, that unbelievably brilliant mind, is so certain that you're not lovable and not good enough and not... She sniffed. Rodney looked down. I love you, she said softly, because you are caring and loyal and brilliant and clever and sweet. And she shrugged. Even with that bleakness inside of you, that voice that tells you that you're not deserving or worthy, you are perfect to me. She sighed and turned around to look at him, eyes filled with water. And you are breaking my heart right now, but... Her eyes closed and one more tear trailed down. But you know what really sucks? She said brokenly. I get it. Whether you admit it to yourself or not,
You love someone else more than you love me. You're connected to him more than you are to me. That's what this is really about. And God damn it, I want you to be happy. I want you to be with the person that will be everything to you, who can convince you that you're worth loving. And I hate that I can't be that for you. I hate it because you're that for me. She sucked in a shaking breath. But I'm not enough for you, she added weakly. Jennifer, she waved a hand at him, then she stood, wiping again at her face. I think I should go. I need to go. Jennifer, I never meant... He scrambled to his feet to follow, only to immediately falter, losing his balance as his still-healing injuries protested the too-fast movement. She was by his side instantly, holding his arm, looking up at him worriedly. Are you okay? She said. Can you walk? He blushed, feeling deeply, incredibly guilty in that moment. I'm fine. No, you're not. It's only been 3 weeks since the planet, fancy ancient medicine or not. She forced a note of professionalism into her voice. You're not fully healed. You were supposed to be resting in your room, and yet I stupidly let you come out here. Well, you didn't so much as let me as I just came out here, sort of against orders. Also, you're not actually my doctor. McBride is. She pressed her lips together unhappily. It accentuated the tear streaks on her cheeks. I know, she said with a sigh. But you're not the only one who takes on guilt for things that they don't wholly have control over. I can walk. I'm good, really. She looked up at him, and he could see how torn she was. Then she reached up to touch the radio in her ear. I'll call someone to help you, she said. I can do it, he said. I'm okay. I mean it. To prove it, he took a few steps toward the door, and he did, in fact, feel all right. You promise? She smiled weakly. You're not just saying that so I can leave. I promise. She gave a halting nod and let his arm go. With a shaking hand, she gently smoothed down the fabric on his sleeve and backed up. I'm going to ask Dr. McBride to check on you, though, okay? She smiled again. Just in case? Sure. She nodded and then took a couple more steps away. Then abruptly she turned and was all but running away from him. She's wrong, Ronnie whispered to himself as she disappeared. You are an asshole. The next morning, as the sun rose, he was sitting alone in his room, pushing the remains of his breakfast around his plate, thinking about everything he'd said to John on MX8221. Breaking up with Jennifer, which was horrible and painful, and he didn't want to talk about it, even with himself, was the right thing to do. But it was only one of the things he had told John he'd wanted to do better. John was, obviously, ignoring him, so there was no point in making that worse. Ronan was, yeah, he still didn't know what to do to get Ronan to like him. But there was one other relationship he could work on, even though it was going to require some real effort on his part, because he was going to have to listen to someone other than himself. Hard as that may be, needs must. Resolved, he pushed the tray aside, walked over to his desk, and picked up the gift-wrapped box. Of course, technically, this had come from Jeannie, but a little white lie never hurt anyone. As he walked to Taylor's quarters, he was actually feeling pretty good. He hadn't lied to Jennifer about that. McBride, who was taciturn and rude, but obviously good at his job, had checked him out last night and told him he was healing well. In another week, he'd be back to full-time in his labs, so McBride had promised, which was good, because part-time McKay clearly had too much time on his hands to think. When he reached her door, he waved his hand over the chime and pasted on a smile. Come in, Taylor called. I've got my hands full. Ronnie shrugged, opened the door, and walked in. For a moment, he wasn't sure what he was seeing. Then he started to laugh. Taylor, sopping wet and holding onto a mass of squealing, squirming toddler, pinned him with a glare.
Put that down and help me, she snarled. His laughter faded as he did what he was told, putting down the gift for Torin on a sideboard and joining her at the portable wash basin. Torin gurgled in glee and splashed water on him. Can you please hand me that soap? She asked, pointing to where it had fallen to the floor. Ronnie gave a nod, kneeling carefully to grab it without stretching his stomach muscles too much, then standing again so he could hand it to her. She then proceeded to wash her child, or, from his eye, excoriate the skin off of him with vigorous scrubbing. He backed up a little. Doesn't that hurt him? He's a toddler, she said with another glare. Not fine china. Okay, he said, raising his hands. And Torin didn't seem to mind at all. Ronnie wasn't sure he'd ever seen a happier and more wicked child. He splashed everything he could reach and laughed every time Taylor tried her glare on him. It clearly didn't carry any weight whatsoever with the 2-year-old. He found that fact hilarious, but he judiciously kept his glee to himself. Towel, Taylor ordered, and Ronnie jumped to comply, giving her the soft object and watching as she swiftly and expertly drew the toddler from the tub, wrapped him up, and then plopped him down in his hammock bed. He rolled and giggled, and Ronnie couldn't resist walking over to play with him as Taylor cleaned up the tub. Sometime later, Ronnie wasn't great with time these days. Torin was struggling to stay awake as Taylor gently rocked his bed, looking calm and dry once more. Ronnie sat opposite, feeling oddly more relaxed by just being here. How do you do that? He asked quietly. Do what? She asked. Be so calm? She gave him a small smile. I am not always this way, she said, as you know. But there are moments, like this one, where all I am thinking about is watching him fall asleep. There is something very soothing about it. She looked across at him. I have seen you like this, when you are deeply concentrating about something. All your you disappears as you mentally wander deeper into whatever puzzle it is you are trying to solve. Ronnie nodded. He actually understood that. My me, eh? She just smiled again. It was then that he noticed that she was alone. Hey, he said, looking around. Where's Kanan? She sighed heavily. Away, she said. What is it I can do for you? She smiled again. I assume you did not come here this morning just to help me bathe Torin. No. But it was an added benefit, he said, and he meant it. It had been fun. Actually, I'm not here for me. I came here just to talk. About? You? She blinked, clearly confused. Me. We never really talk about how you're doing, and so I thought I'd come by and, you know, ask how you are. She just stared at him, then her gaze turned, scrutinizing. Ah. This is because you almost died. His eyes widened. What? You do this every time you have a close call, my friend. You come around and ask how I am doing. I do not. Yes, you do. He frowned, trying to recall the last time he'd had a real conversation with Taylor. And, oh, yes, it was after he thought they were all going to die a few months back. He blushed, and she chuckled lightly. I do not mind, she said. In fact, I rather love it when we talk. You are surprisingly good at it when you want to be. Really? He said, perking up. She gave a nod. You are just terrible at being consistent about it. Well, he said, frowning again. Not this time. This time I'm going to be better at it. Of course. Oh, you doubt me, he said, wagging a finger at her. But you'll see. You won't be able to get rid of me. She smiled again and returned her gaze to Torin, her eyebrows lifted slightly. He is actually falling asleep, she said, her voice wondering. It usually takes longer. It's the Ronnie effect. I put kids to sleep. Taylor slapped a hand over her mouth to stifle her laugh, and Ronnie smirked. She shook her head then and reached over to press a hand to his knee in thanks for the joke. But I really am curious. Ronnie said then. Where is Kanan? I feel like I haven't seen him around much. Her good humor faded, and she sighed again. Kanan and I, she looked towards the window, at the bright morning sky, the sun now clear of the horizons and climbing, are struggling. He sat up a little straighter. Struggling? She frowned. It is difficult to express, but he has not been happy here. She glanced at him, and upon seeing his attentiveness, she smiled warmly.
You do not want to hear about this.
I do, he said. I really do. Perhaps I can help? I'd like to, if I can. Her smile grew, and then she gave a shrug. All right. She had paused, rocking torn, and leaned over to start again. It started a little while back, not long after we returned from Earth. As you know, he was on New Athos when we were forced to fly to Earth, and since we have been back, he has been spending more time there, helping build and also welcoming all the new families joining from the other planets devastated by Michael. Ronnie couldn't help but feel confused. Those seem like good things.
Oh, they are, she said, smiling again. They really are. He's a wonderful leader.
Ah, now Rodney got it. You need him, Ronnie challenged. She looked at him, her eyes wet. Perhaps, she said, but not as much as they do. And she gave a shrug. It is what I would be doing if I were with him. He loves it, and he feels like he is making a difference. Those are things I cannot deny him just to have him home more often. She looked at Torn, who was fully asleep now. She pulled her hand back from the bed. But I will admit, she admitted, it feels like he is slipping away. Each time he returns, he spends more time with Torn than with me.
Rodney gave a nod. You think he has found a greater purpose?
In a way, yes. She gave a shrug. I believe he will always love Torn first and above all. Of that, I have no doubt. But myself? She pulled her head. I am not sure I will be placed as high. I fear I am already in third place.
He gave a nod. That sucks.
It does.
Is there anything I can do? She smiled at him indulgently.
No. She looked at Torin. But thank you for asking.
Well then, he considered, then brightened. Can I help Kanan? Her eyebrows lifted. What?
He and I have chatted a bit from time to time. I know they're having trouble with some of their generators and harvesters. I won't be allowed to go in the field or anything like that anytime soon, but I could help fix some things. And while I'm there, he gave a shrug, maybe he and I could chat about other things, like how great his baby mama is and that he should perhaps bring her some flowers next time he returns.
She studied him for a moment, then she smiled wryly.
Why not? Although, please do not say baby mama, she chuckled. Would you use that term for Jennifer?
Ronnie's smile tightened. Luckily, Taylor just chuckled again.
Do not worry, she said. I happen to know she finds your odd sayings charming, as do I, sometimes. Though, not that one.
He gave a shrug, duly noted. As he spoke, she covered up a yawn, and so he stood. Well, you should probably use some rest yourself, he said. I'll go see Woolsey later today and see about going to New Athos. She stood as well, graceful as ever.
And how are you? She said. I forgot to ask, and... Oh! She flushed slightly. I just realized I made you bend down to fetch me that soap. Your injuries, are you...
I'm fine, he said. You know me. Take a lickin'.
Keep on tickin', she finished.
Then she grinned, clearly pleased with herself for remembering that odd saying, and he couldn't not join her. It took a week, but McBride finally gave him the go-ahead. He had the list from Kanan of everything that needed fixing, a rolling pack brimming with tools and MREs, a Thosian food, not exactly his favorite. And now he stood in the gate room, rubbing his hands in anticipation of finally getting to go through the gate again, even if just to New Athos. It was weird how much he'd missed it. Taylor and Ronan were hovering, Ronan pulling the pack while Taylor chatted with Amelia before descending the steps to join them on the gate room floor.
"You know I'm just going to New Athos for a couple of days, right?" he said.
"You are going to help Kanan," Taylor said, smiling. "Of course I would want to see you off."
"And you shouldn't be lifting things this heavy," Ronan said, tugging at the pack. "Do you need all this? How much food are you bringing?"
"Oh," Ronnie shrugged. "Enough, and it rolls. I'll be fine."
"Is Jennifer not seeing you off?" Taylor asked, looking around.
Ronnie shook his head. "She's got work to do in the infirmary."
Ronan gave a nod and looked around, obviously looking for one other person. Ronnie gave him a thin smile.
"It's fine," he said. "I'll see him when I get back."
Ronan just frowned, but he handed Ronnie the handle to the rolling pack.
Damn, it was heavy. It was a good thing it had wheels.
"Right," he said. "Dial it up," he called upstairs. Amelia was already moving. Woolsey waved a hand and Rodney waved back.
"Don't do anything I wouldn't do," Woolsey said from the balcony, giving a small smile.
"No," Ronan whispered in his ear, smirking. "Do."
Rodney grinned as the wormhole engaged, gave him and Taylor one last look, and walked through the wormhole.
"Colonel Shepard, this is the control room. Are you free?"
John sighed. Technically, it was his scheduled time off, but he was just staring out the window of his room instead of reading Tolstoy. So he was free. And it was Amelia. She likely wasn't just radioing him on a whim. He tapped his radio.
"Shepard here. What do you need?"
"We've lost Dr. McKay, sir."
John frowned, sitting up.
"I'm sorry?"
"He was supposed to be visiting New Athos to help them with their new harvester, but he apparently never arrived."
Shepard pressed his lips together thinly.
"Who was with him?"
"He went by himself, sir."
Shepard ran a hand down his face.
"Of course he did. I'll be right there."
The end. To be continued in part 3, Behind Closed Doors.